returned, of course, I, by virtue of the fact that I had spent so many years in Albany and so on and so forth, I was quite active in Republican politics for a number of years afterwards, and as time went on, and I became older and not able to be as active as I had previously, I haven't taken much of a part in it lately, although they have been offering me the courtesy of asking my counsel on some occasion.
Sure.
But with my conclusion of my work in Albany in December, my active political life practically ended at that time.
Yeah. Now, you were in education, because you had some background there. You served on the board.
Yes, I was named to the Board of Education. I can't recall whose place I took, but I was named, and I served for, I can't recall the number of years, mm-hmm. and the latter part of which time, while I was president of the board.
Mm-hmm. I was under Triffency. You began?
Triffency. I resigned from that when I was elected to the assembly. But my activity on the board was nowhere near as exacting as it is at the present time, because we were still a Union Free School District at the time. That was before the centralization. Centralization mm-hmm. came after. I had ceased to be active in local education. Mm-hmm. But I did have a pleasure, and it was a pleasure to have served with all of these various chaps on the Board of Education, most of whom, as I tried to recall the other day, I think I'm not the only one left. Well, Dr. Shoemaker, myself, I think I'm not.
Oh.
Well, Don Acker, there are three of us, I guess.
Oh.
At the time, it was the time of Ed O'Reilly and J.C. Posse and all that group, Jack Burnham and so on and so forth. But it was a pleasure to have worked, although, as I say, my trials and tribulations, if there were any, I would presume to be minor compared to what they are today mm-hmm. with the expanded educational system,
with
the centralization. Because afterwards, I was on the board, was instrumental in buying the site where Oak Orchard School is now, and it wasn't developed. We just bought it from Boyd,
yeah.
William Boyd, who owned it.
Had an orchard over there.
Yeah, which was a very nominal price. It was a couple thousand dollars. It was a very cheap price. And we knew it was a possible site for a future educational building. So we bought it, but that's the only identification that I ever had with it. Afterwards, Ronnie Cannon became along in the original board when the centralization took place, a lot of this expansion. Because when I was, we just had this school building here in the old building over on the east part of town,
Oak Orchard Street School,
yeah. And Ensign School, which are both elementary schools in the old building. But I've forgotten whether Howard Brown was superintendent of schools in that first one in there. I think he was. I think Triffency followed Brown.
Triffency followed. I came in 1947 when Triffency was superintendent.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure prior to that, but you've been there a number of years.
I think Howard Brown was superintendent when I first went on.
I see.
Yeah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. And that certainly came along, and he was there the greater part of the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about your attorneys and so forth. Like to say a word about your church?
Well, my religious background, I grew up in the country where I went to three or four different, any kind of a church that happened to come along and want a quarter itself. I never identified with any particular denomination. It was not until I came to Medina that I joined the First Presbyterian Church, and was rather active there, superintendent of Sunday school. And then when I was married in 1923, I married into the Episcopal Church. My wife was Episcopalian, and I joined the Episcopal Church, of which I have been a member since. And I was long-term member of the vestry, and served in a diocesan capacity and as a member of the Board of Trustees of the diocese, and also on the General Committee, which is one of the large committees. And so I have, I've been, until not able to go only frequently, I have always felt great affinity for the church and all the church stood for, and I guess you'd call myself a pretty active and regular member, because it would be only on very, very rare occasions that I wouldn't be in church either. At the 8 o'clock service or 11, not largely the early morning service. But Bishop Scaife, who was when I was the Bishop of the Diocese of Western New York at the time, I had the privilege of, at the time he was inducted into office here, I had the privilege of representing the diocese as far as the laity is concerned on the committee, and gave the welcoming speech, which I always felt quite complimented. Of course, Father Wilkinson, John Wilkinson, whom you well knew, mm-hmm. he was a very good friend of mine, and I probably, all of these various opportunities for service and recognition, I presume came largely because of our friendship. And I've been quite a regular attendant since that time. But I was born, of course, a Protestant, and as these little churches in the country were non-denominational in a way.
Yes.
And it was not until I came to Medina and chose a church, and I chose the First Presbyterian Church. Mr. Finley, I don't know if that name means anything to you now. William Finley was pastor at the time. And I was superintendent of Sunday school there and took an active part in the church. And of course, my two brothers still belong there. But then, when I married the first time, I remarried in the Episcopal Church.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. Now, one of the things I like to ask people that live long enough to have had a little memory of the horse and buggy days, and when the automobile first came, do you remember your first automobile or anything?
Well, I remember my first.
The first one you ever saw, maybe?
No, I don't know. I remember the first one I ever saw. I remember the first one that the family ever had was an old Ford automobile, and I remember the first time I ever tried to drive, I put it in reverse and ran right across the road into a ditch and made a turn.
Oh dear, really? Didn't know how to stop it.
Huh? I didn't know how to stop it.
Yeah.
But the first car I ever owned, well, I think it was around 1912 or something, or in there, was a Chandler, I think, old Chandler. But of course, the horse and buggy days were. I remember something about them because when I went to Knowlesville School, I used to drive either horse and buggy, or during the winter time, a horse and cutter, but in the daytime. And I remember one instance there, I was down there freezing to death. As a matter of fact, I got so cold that I just went in the barn and lay down to get numb. Somebody came along and found me, I guess I would have frozen to death. But we turned over, we tipped over a few times during notification notices. Mm-hmm. But my first acquaintance with automobiles was, of course, the back. You see, I was born in 1893, was along the old Ridge Road, which is now 104, was a popular route. And the first automobiles that that I envisioned were coming from Edina, like people who were going from Edina to Lakeside. They had to pass mm-hmm. our house, and some of the older families of the community, like Charles Swift or his father, or some of those would have an automobile. And the Ridge Road was quite a popular place, although that was before it was improved at all. It was a very sandy sort of a thing. Mm. And driving in sand is difficult, or even more difficult than driving in snow.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a hill there that was a kind of a stopper. And on many, many occasions, we'd have to get out and push the car up the hill to get them going, you know.
Yeah.
But, back, horse and buggy days, actually, were really a little bit before I became identified with Medina. It became motorized to quite an extent.
Sure.
There were several car dealers here at the time I came here. The Walker family, Laverne and Matthew Walker, both had agencies. Erwin and Raleigh had an agency, and Webster agency. They had, with the Walkers had Ford, and Buick, and so on. Harry Robbins was probably the first really devotee, you might say, of motoring in Medina. And at that time, and I was president of the Orleans County Automobile Club for a number of years. We had an automobile club here with, I think, 700 members or more.
Well, I've seen references to that now. Yeah. What was the purpose of this automobile club?
Well, like the AAA is? Really, to act as a liaison between the motorists and the state in legislation. Really, that's what actually was well, of course, the reason, I suppose, it was a community interest that among people that had automobiles to get together and recite their experiences and so on and so forth. But really, the motive was for the improvement of conditions, like your roads and
good
so
road.
On and so forth, mm-hmm. and regulatory passage of regulation, regulatory driving, and so on and so forth. It was really to improve motoring in general.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, several hundred, each county at that time. Well, first in Medina had a club, and then Alvin had a club, and then they joined together. And but I think it was just sort of a community of interest.
Mm-hmm.
That drove, put them together in the first place. Then they used to organize tours. They'd start out
on
a Saturday and 50 or 75
of them. All go together.
All go together and motor someplace.
Do you remember where you were and what you thought on Pearl Harbor Day?
Well, yes, I know where I was. I was attending a, it was on a Sunday afternoon. My wife was attending a social occasion of an Elks Club in the afternoon when Pearl Harbor Day came. Of course, I was particularly concerned because Todd was at that age, and I knew that sooner or later he would have to become involved in the war. It wasn't too much later that if he was, he was he enlisted and started out the camp out in Missouri, I can't recall. He went to Olean, as a matter of fact. He went to a camp out near Missouri, and he was sent there. And then he was sent back to school. At that time, they had a program where they were, I don't know if they were calling it or not, where they were sending them to school. So he was sent back to Bonaventure.
Oh.
At Olean. It was right back in our own backyard. Yeah. And he was there up until the time when he was sent overseas. Afterwards, the program was disbanded because there was too much criticism of it, fighting the Ivy, Battle of the Ivy Halls and so on and so
forth. Yeah.
But he went from there directly overseas. He was assigned to I remember the time very well. Of course, everybody was so indignant and passionate about the situation. It really, at the time, I don't think anybody, the average person, appreciated the military capacity of the Japanese. They said, what the lobsters coming over here doing? Which later turned out, of course, to be not so, but I can remember it. I remember the days of the war days very well, of course.
I wanted to go back just for a moment to your family again. Maybe I missed that. Again, the name of your father and mother, a little bit about your family.
Well, my father family, my father was Arthur Waters, and the Waters family came into this country from Canada.
Oh.
And settled here. Most of them, regretfully, are gone. As a matter of fact, the local Waters generation includes with Bob and his group. I mean, he has girls.
Yes.
And Lewis has got a girl. Harold has got two girls. There are no boys to carry
the name.
No, after Lewis and Harold and myself leave the picture, there'll be no more Waters directly attached to the family. The other family was family that goes way back 1756,
mm-hmm.
family, the Lewis family, and it was through this group or this family that I identified, as I said some time ago, with one of the organizers of the Commune, the family, and the now defunct sons of the American Revolution, George Robinson, across the street, and myself, really, Harry Tanner, three of us. Organized this. But this goes back here to the William Lewis, who was born in Rhode Island on July 10, 1756, and traces the genealogy of the whole family down through my mother and so on and so forth.
Sure.
And they came into the Gaines region, Gaines area. I can't tell you, but it was along in the middle part of the 19th century, long age or something, really.
Oh, yeah.
It settled in near Albion, and where they remained since that time.
I see.
Most of the Lewis family now are scattered or gone or so on and so forth. But my mother's name was Ida May Lewis, and she lived to be, she died in her 90th year. She was, my father died when he was 76, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I had my two brothers, Lewis and Harold.
Yeah.
My sister died a couple of years ago.
I see.
So that's as far as my family is concerned. Mm-hmm. My father was engaged at a small farm and was a cooper, if you know what a cooper
is.
Yes,
sure.
Making barrels or...
Did he have a shop or a
firm? He and his brother, Frank Waters.
Oh, yeah.
Who was Laverne Waters and Dr. Waters, and maybe you've heard of Dr.
Yes.
Stanley Waters.
Mm-hmm.
His father and my father had a cooper shop, what they called a cooper shop at the time, where there were four or five of them worked, making apple barrels.
Right.
And they started along the middle of the summer and worked through the fall. Then he had this small farm of about 50 acres that he worked.
Oh, yeah. Where was that located?
Well, you know where the river road is,
yes.
You know?
Right.
You know where the big stone,
inn?
Was the inn there, no?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. At that time, that's where my Uncle Frank lived.
Oh.
And he and my grandfather had a general store there for a good many years.
Oh.
And my father's residence was two houses north of there.
Oh. Probably the house is gone.
No, the house is still there.
Oh.
The house is still there, yes.
Uh-huh.
The house that I was born in is not. There was a little house that I was born in that afterwards burned.
I see.
But the old family home, the Waters family home, is still there.
Oh.
And I sold it 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the people are fixing it up, doing a nice job with it. But that's where I was born, just north of the Ridge Road, and of course the River Road, short way down.
Yeah.
Mr. Waters, I'd like to ask you to tell a little bit about your first marriage and your first wife, if you would.
Yes, well, I was married in September of 1923 to Helen Dorothy Eckert. She was a daughter of Harry and Julie Eckert. Her father was a cigar maker here in Medina for many years, although she was born in Philadelphia and came to Medina as a young girl. She was the mother of my one and only child, Robert Eckert Waters, and she was very active in community affairs during her lifetime, especially during World War II. And she was, she died very suddenly in 1952. Want me to go on from there?
Yes, I believe that you have, that there is a very active camp fund named for her.
Yes, but I'd rather wait and put that all in.
Okay.
And in 1950, this is my second marriage, was in 1954.
Yes.
And I married a Mary Harmon Hazard, a native of Alabama.
Alabama, New York?
Alabama, it's the state of Alabama.
Really? Oh, okay.
And she, at the time, was operating a nursing home. She's a nurse and was operating a nursing home in Albion.
Rose Manor?
Okay. And you came back to Medina to make your home.
Oh, she made it. We always made our home here in this house.
Yes. How about telling us, would you like to tell us a little bit about this house?
Yes, I purchased the house in 1929. At the time, I had made all plans and had plans drafted for a new home on Howell Parkway. Mm. But this house was on the market at a very low price.
This must have been about the time of the Depression, right?
It was. Yes. It was the time of the Depression.
Yes. Lots of houses went.
Very low price, yes. And so I purchased this house. The house was built in 1907 by Samuel and Jesse Landor, who were at that time proprietors and owners of Landor's store in Medina, which was located where the J.C. Penney Company is now.
Mm, right on the corner of Main and...
Corner of Main and East Center Street.
Mm-hmm.
And they owned the home, lived in the home here, raised three children, two boys and a girl, which are all are living as far as I know,
mm.
until they both passed away. And the estate was sold to Robert Brennan. The estate sold the house to Robert Brennan. And he was here until 1909 when I bought the house from him. One of the, not older homes in Medina, but was one of the better homes in Medina at the time. And, of course, most of these, that was approximately 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the village west of here was not developed at that time. As a matter of fact, when I originally purchased my lot on Howell Parkway, I was the first one after the owner, Mr. Fred Howell, to purchase a lot there. And,
do you still own that lot?
No, the lot was later I sold the lot to Ernest Hart.
Oh, yes.
And it's now owned by the Hart Estate.
I see. You, this property goes out back as far as
yes, it goes. It's a deep lot. It goes from Center Street to the alley, I don't know, Proctor Alley, I guess they call
Proctor
it.
Proctor Alley, yeah. I remember when we lived nearby seeing you work the hedges and the roses and the flowers.
That's right, Proctor Alley, yeah.
Yes.
Yes, it's a very deep lot.
Yes. I wonder if you would like to tell us a little bit about your interest in the child welfare.
Well, my interest in the child welfare was primarily due to the interest which,
as a matter of fact,
she was one of the organizers of the Child Welfare Association in the county, and at the time of her death was president.
I see.
I later was president for about 5 years of the group, although it is largely and almost exclusively a women's organization. It was because of her interest in child welfare that the Journal Register, at that time, at the time of her death in 1952, established the Journal Register Camp Fund,
mm-hmm.
which has been very well received by the community, has grown from a few modest dollars to some $4,500 each year, which is the major contribution towards financing approximately 80 youngsters.
Mm-hmm. Does the number remain at approximately 80 youngsters every year?
About every year, about 80 youngsters.
Mm-hmm. How are these youngsters selected?
Well, they're selected by groups in each of the various schools, the school nurse largely.
I see.
And each of the five county schools mm-hmm. select which the youngsters, which in their opinion are the most worthy to comply with the concept of the summer camp, mm-hmm. which is largely geared to furnish camping experiences to those youngsters from family who otherwise could not afford to send, mm-hmm. it, send their
youngsters. What camps do they go to?
Troutlets, north of Holly, or north of Brockport, we'll say. Okay. It's in Monroe County. It's a Rochester YMCA camp.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I wonder if, in the few moments that we have remaining, if you would have anything more to say about World War II. I know you said Bob was very much involved in it.
Yeah, well, of course, my involvement in World War II, of course, I took part in many and all of the various local campaigns that they had here, which were several, largely through the selling of war bonds. Mm-hmm. I was chairman at some of them and participated in others. World War II was a difficult experience for Medina, along with the rest of the country, economically, because of the fact that much of the, or all of our efforts were directed towards winning the war.
Sure.
And much of the favorite merchandise, which would be available during peace times, was not available during the war times, which made it, and I'm speaking now from the newspaper point of view, and its advertising revenue, which made it very limited as far as the advertising revenue was concerned. As a matter of fact, if it hadn't been for a great deal of cooperative advertising for the sale of war bonds, I doubt if the general register would have continued. As a matter of fact, we did reduce publication from, at that time, 6 days a week. We published on Saturday, which we no longer do. To three.
Three times a week?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Three times a week. We published on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday of each week. Three times.
Now, was that from 1942?
That was during the 40s. Uh-huh. During the war years of 40. Was it 42?
Well, it would be early. Uh-huh. So it'd be 42 to 45.
About that time. And of course, we're not the only industry that was affected during that time, but it was all done with the cooperative spirit. I mean, because as I said before, our interest was all geared to successful conclusion of the war, as far as we're concerned. And great many of the families, like our family, were interested because we had members in the armed services.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were very trying times, yet there are times which knit the community together. I mean, it was a catalyst to towards joining the community together in one common effort,
mm-hmm.
so that
in collecting for war bonds, did they have dances at the armory at that time?
No, there was no public occasion such as dances.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, our